annually, the average American eats 34 pounds of cheese, and a third of the milk made in the U.S. goes toward cheese making. Well, we're here in Wisconsin, and we live by the theory you can never eat too much cheese. We thought we'd try to get to know our cheese just a little bit better today.
Michael Tunick joins us now to help raise our cheese IQ. He's a research chemist with the USDA's Agricultural Research Service and the author of The Science of Cheese. Michael, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me on.
So it's easy to take cheese for granted, especially here in Wisconsin, or just slap it on our cheeseburger and not think about it anymore. But as someone who's made it their mission in life, more or less, to study cheese, why should we learn more about it?
Just because of the science involved, that science can get involved in quite esoteric things, that it's also involved in everyday things that you don't think about, and one of them is cheese, that there's quite a bit of science going on there, and so that's why I wrote the book.
Well, I want to start with one of the more burning questions about cheese relevant here in Wisconsin, especially fresh cheese curds. Why do they squeak? What do we know about that from the scientific perspective?
Well, the same thing as when you're taking a shower and you run your fingers down your hair and you get a squeak that way. What's happening is that you've got water and protein together, and you run your fingers down it, and you set up a vibration, and that vibration can be heard in the audible range. Same thing happens if you run some chalk down a chalkboard. If you do it a particular way, it squeaks. Same thing happens with cheese, is that when your teeth are going down on a piece of fresh cheese, then you're also getting that vibration. You don't get it so much after a few days, now that the water has kind of set up inside of the cheese matrix. But when you have a fresh curd, it'll squeak because of that reason. Just think of yourself as taking a shower, and that's why the cheese squeaks.
Why cheese curds, though, and not, cheddar?
Well, that's because once cheese is more than a few days old, then the water has completely distributed itself within the protein matrix. The matrix has the protein and also has the fat, it has the water, has salt, and everything else. And so you have the water molecules are more trapped inside that matrix, and they aren't as willing to come out. So when you run your teeth up and down a piece of cheddar that's been around for a little while, you're not going to get that squeaking sensation because the water isn't as readily available. It's more tied up with the protein.
Well, some varieties of cheese, so look at the history a bit, they go back ages. What are some of the oldest kinds of cheese?
Well, cheese has been made for a very long time, and the figure that it was something like 8,000 years ago when a traveler had stomach made probably from a sheep had some milk in there, and he arrived at a destination and went to take a drink, and it had curdled into the curds and whey, and the curds were the cheese. So that would be like your first cottage cheese, more or less. But there have been other cheeses that are known to have been around for quite some time, depending, like Roquefort from the year 879 and that kind of thing. So you have different varieties that have been made for hundreds of years, and then you have others before that which are basically the same thing, which have been made even longer. So you have cheeses that have actually been made one way or another for a few thousand years, but they haven't called it the same thing the whole way down.
Well, we're talking right now to Michael Tunick. We're talking about the science of cheese. We eat an awful lot of it here in Wisconsin, a lot of fresh cheese curds, as we're hearing about. And we're talking about the science behind cheese. And we'll be learning more about things that we're going to raise our cheese IQ. You can reach us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page and go ahead and start asking your questions. And, Michael, I want to go back to some of the cheese science 101 types of questions here. How is cheese made? Can you give us a thumbnail sketch?
Okay. Well, we started with that curds and whey business that I told you about. And you take milk and you add microorganisms to it if it's, the milk has been pasteurized. And what they do is start converting the lactose, the milk sugar, into lactic acid. And that starts the pH down, so it becomes more acidic. Then you also add rennet, which is the coagulant. Now, that originally came from the stomach of a calf or some other mammal. Now you can make it from a microbe. But both of those work together. The coagulant breaks the casein, which is the milk protein, at a particular spot, and that causes the protein to fall apart and coagulate into the curd. And the curd is what the cheesemaker then works with. So basically, they try to get rid of as much whey from the curd as possible, and the curd becomes is cut into different sized cubes, depending on what kind of cheese you're working with. It's heated at different temperatures, again, depending on the kind of cheese. And eventually you have that curd, and then it gets pressed into a particular shape that you're looking for, and it's allowed to age for a while, and what you wind up with is cheese. And it all depends on what kind of cheese you're making as far as all these different parameters go. So you can get something from something like cottage cheese, which is really soft, to Parmesan, which is really hard, depending on all the different things that you're looking at.
Well, I want to take a phone call now. We've got John on the line from Onalaska. Hi, John.
Hi. I have some friends who think European cheese is much better than the cheese in the USA. And they say that it's because they don't pasteurize their milk. Tell us about that.
All right. Thanks so much for that question, John. That's a great question, Michael. You talk about people who are worried about what they call dead cheese here in the States.
Yeah, that's right. The thing is that when you pasteurize the milk, you're going to kill off not only the pathogens that you don't want in there, but you also kill off all of the naturally occurring beneficial microorganisms that you do want in there. So when you add the starter culture to it, that bacteria at the very beginning of the cheese making I just mentioned, you're adding back particular microorganisms that you want, and you go from there. Now, with the European cheeses, which are not pasteurized, you have all the microorganisms that were there coming straight out of the cow, and that will include some things which are not in a commercially prepared starter culture. So that means you're going to have a much larger array of flavors in an unpasteurized cheese because you have all these different bacteria which are going to be creating all these different compounds which you don't have in a pasteurized cheese. Now, the thing is that unpasteurized cheese is not legal in the United States unless you have certain things like it has to be aged for 60 days, so that eliminates any fresh cheeses. And so a lot of people are afraid to eat unpasteurized cheese, so therefore you get almost all the cheese in the United States is pasteurized, but it won't have as much flavor as an unpasteurized cheese.
And I think you say in your book somewhere, though, that if you do let a cheese sit there for 60 days, the organisms in the cheese that would worry you will have died off anyway.
Yeah, that's right. That's why they give it a 60-day minimum before you can market a unpasteurized cheese, that they figure that the dangerous microorganisms will have died out by then.
We're talking right now with Michael Tunick, a research chemist with the USDA's Agricultural Research Service, and he's the author of The Science of Cheese.
And this being Wisconsin, we bet you have questions or maybe some cheese-making experience of your own that you can share with us at 800-642-1234. Call in with a question about the science of cheese, how it's made, what makes different kinds of cheese taste the way they do.
We're talking with Michael Tunick, research chemist with the USDA's Agricultural Research Service and the author of The Science of Cheese.
And we want to hear your cheese questions. Are you curious about a particular kind of cheese, how it's made, what makes one type hard and tasty, one type soft and mellow, or if you're a cheese maker, share your insights. Tell us about the cheese that went wrong. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post over at the Central Time Facebook page.
And Michael, I want to ask you about stinky cheese. It's always controversial, even among people who love cheese. Some people just can't stomach the stinky stuff. And Limburger cheese, as an example of that, has a pretty fascinating cultural story. What can you tell us about how it fell out of favor?
Yes, well, Limburger, like these most of these stinky cheeses, is made by putting a culture on the outside. Brevibacterium's linens is the name of it. And it's the same kind of microorganism that's found on your feet, on sweaty feet. So
the cheese actually does smell like feet.
That's right. And they actually, these are smear-ripened cheeses, and they are not terribly flavorful on the inside. They're kind of bland, but if you can get past the aroma. But anyway, Limburger has always been considered as the quintessential stinky cheese. Mark Twain wrote a story about it, and it's a monologue by a comedian on first record ever sold by the Victor Talking Machine Company. Charlie Chaplin had a movie, Soldier Arms, in which he received Limburger from a package from home and lobbed it into a trench of German soldiers to force their surrender. So anyway, when Prohibition began in 1920, all these immigrants to the United States couldn't go to their bars and eat Limburger cheese like they were used to. So when finally Prohibition ended, the popularity didn't recover. And then turned out that Bruno Hauptmann, who was convicted of kidnapping the Lindbergh baby, admitted that that was his favorite snack. So that really took care of the popularity. So it turns out that now it's about 650,000 pounds a year are made by one company in Monroe, Wisconsin.
Right, in Monroe, Wisconsin. Here in Wisconsin,
that's right.
We have the last Limburger factory in the States.
And that's right. It's they're making about one-tenth of what they used to make back in the early 50s, but it's still being made.
Interesting. And as far as sort of what the cows eat, I'm curious about that. And I guess when I was in New Zealand, I'm just going to dive off here for a while. I noticed their cheese tasted really, really different than cheese in America tastes, and it does here in Wisconsin. Is that because of what the cows eat? Can it make that big a difference?
Yes, it can, depending on whether the cows are confined in their stalls and eat regular total mixed ration, or whether they're allowed out on the fields and then where they can eat anything they want. So if you're in an area where they can eat, say, you know, flowers or something like that, then you're going to get that passed on to the cheese. If they're eating like onion grass, then that's going to get passed on too. There's differences between cows that are eating in the lowlands and cows that are eating high up in the Alps, again, because of what they're eating. So that will make some sort of difference. And again, you have the pasteurization or not pasteurization question, which will also affect the flavor quite a bit. But yeah, you know, if the cow's eating it, then it's going to show up in the cheese. And remember also that when you make cheese, you're getting rid of 90% of the water, so you're concentrating everything by a factor of 10. So that's going to really show up.
Let's go to our phone lines now. We've got John joining us in Racine. Hi, John.
Hello. I was wondering if there is any advantage when you buy cheese, some of them will come with a wax wrapper instead of a plastic wrapper. Does that make any real difference?
No, not really. That's mostly that's tradition. We have Edam and Gouda, for instance, which come with the traditional wax on them. And some cheddars are made with like a black wax on it, and some of them are made with plastic wrapping or whatever. And a lot of that is just a traditional way of doing things, that the wax will really keep the moisture in pretty well, and that will help it ripen a lot, But a lot of these cheeses, when they're sitting on the shelf ripening, they don't have anything on them at all. So this is just sort of like window dressing, but there are some effects that the wax will have.
Okay, well, thanks so much for your question, John. And let's go on to Evan in Green Bay. Hi, Evan.
Hi. I recently tried a Gruyere cheese, and as I was eating it, I noticed that it tasted a little bit like Parmesan cheese, and it has a firmness more than like a cheddar. And so I was wondering if Gruyere is related to Parmesan or if they're made in similar ways.
They're actually made a bit differently. Now, with Parmesan especially, that they try to get that cheese pretty hard. So with that one, they also add lipase, which is an enzyme which breaks down the fat and creates additional flavors doing that. But then with the Parmesan, they let that age for literally for years before it's served, so that it gets really dried out and very flavorful. Gruyere isn't quite the same way, but the thing is that you know, in cheese, you're going to get a lot of the same flavors over different varieties, just because you're starting with the same starting material, which is milk, and you're going to have some of the same microorganisms in there, so you're going to get some of the same products, and you're going to get some of the same flavors in different cheeses, even though they're made differently. But no, Gruyere and Parmesan aren't really part of the same family, but there are similarities in flavor between those and with lots of other cheeses.
Well, thanks for that call, Evan. Hope that answers your question. And we'll read this one from Joan in Park Falls. She wonders, are there any cheeses that lactose intolerant people can eat? I heard that some aged cheese should be safe, but I don't want to take a chance without knowing for certain.
Well, when I mentioned that you have the starter culture being added, they eat the lactic acid, they eat the lactose, the milk sugar, to form lactic acid. So that gets rid of the lactose. So if you have a cheese that's aged, you're not going to have any lactose in there. So a lactose intolerant person ought to be able to eat it. The fresh cheeses are the ones that could be a problem because there's still some lactose in there because you don't have the bacteria consuming those. So if you get with harder cheese like cheddar or Swiss or the Parmesan that we mentioned, those should be fine for a lactose intolerant person. Now, if the person is actually allergic to, say, milk protein, then cheese is going to be out completely. But if you're lactose intolerant, then aged cheese ought to be fine.
In terms of trends in cheese, how are we doing as far as what cheese is the most popular here in the United States?
Well, for a number of years now, the trend has been toward increasing consumption of mozzarella, and that's because of the popularity of pizza. So it had been that cheddar was king, but until the 1990s, and then mozzarella passed it. So right now, about 34% of the cheese that's made in the United States is mozzarella, and cheddar is down to about 30%. So that is the big trend. There's another trend is something that I've worked on, and that's Hispanic cheese. That since you're getting a growing Hispanic population, you're getting increases in queso fresco and queso blanco and cotija and these Oaxaca and these other Mexican and Central South American cheeses that weren't quite so popular before. So that's about 2% of the production in the United States, but 10 or 15 years ago, it was almost 0%. They didn't even keep track of it. So that's one that's kind of up and coming.
Hmm. Well, Michael,
another trend is Swiss cheese. The consumption of that is going down. Hmm. And, you know, it's one of my favorites, but that's, decreasing at the expense of some of these other varieties.
And that was going to be my next question. If you could, if you could only eat one cheese for the rest of your life as someone who knows about all these cheeses and how they're made, what would you pick?
Well, there, it depends on the mood you're in. I mean, Stilton is one that I really like. That's a blue-veined cheese where you have the mold powder that's skewered into the cheese, and it grows in there, and you get these lovely veins, and you get different flavors than you would with these other cheeses. So that and Gorgonzola and those are cheeses that I really like. one thing about the American consumer is that they're usually brought up on bland cheeses, like American cheese, and so they don't really develop a taste for the very flavorful cheeses, which is kind of too bad. But, you know, the flavorful cheeses are the ones that I like.
Is American cheese actually a cheese?
Yeah, there are different standards depending on how it's made. Basically, they take cheddar cheese, some older cheddar, and they take some younger cheddar that doesn't have much flavor, and they grind them up, mix them together, add an emulsifier, and what you have is it's, you know, pasteurized processed American cheese, or if you have more of one thing or less of another, then it's pasteurized processed cheese food or cheese product or that kind of thing. It all depends on whether you're adding different things to it or how spreadable it is. So the FDA has these different regulations. But it isn't a natural cheese because you take natural cheese and you make the American cheese with it.
Well, Michael, it's interesting stuff. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Thanks for having me on.
That was Michael Tunick, a research chemist with the USDA's Agricultural Research Service and the author of The Science of Cheese.